Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shirtless. The show is heard on WBCQ, The Planet, every Monday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And it's re-aired on Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I believe. And you can also hear this show on Podomatic.com. Just punch in, go to the website and punch in Camp Constitution. And you can, this show will be uploaded, you know, shortly, probably within the next week or so from hearing this. You can also go to our YouTube channel, Camp Constitution. And we do encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel as well as follow our Podomatic. It is also heard on IPMNation.com every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. So it's brought to you by Camp Constitution, which, among other things, runs a week-long family camp. And our camp is coming up very shortly, August 5th to the 11th in the beautiful Berkshire Mountains, Pittsfield, Massachusetts. And there's still some room left to enroll if you're interested. And visit our website at campconstitution.net. And we encourage you, when you do visit our website, check out the Samuel Blumenfeld Archive. Sam was a pioneer in the homeschool movement. And I inherited his books and writings and papers. And over the last several years, we compiled this incredible archive, which is a free resource. It's a great resource for homeschoolers, for people that want to teach anyone how to read properly, how to do penmanship, how to learn about what happened to our educational system. And it's all free. Just click on that link, and all we ask is for an email address, and you have access to all the, I think we've got about a month's worth of audios and videos and all kinds of great things. Anyway, we have a guest on the line, and I want to welcome Pastor Macy Campos. How are you doing, Pastor?
How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. I'm glad you were able to kind of join us on a short notice. But now, just I'll give you a little introduction, and then you can to tell people about yourself and your very important ministry. Well, it was a couple of years ago, a friend of mine out in Western Massachusetts had mentioned this ministry, and I took a look at, I think, a few of the videos, and I said, oh, this guy's great. I think the time frame didn't work out for us for some reason or another, but we just had Pastor Campo speak at a luncheon that we have in the Boston area, and that, by the way, that incredible presentation is on our YouTube channel. Pastor Campos is of Mexican extraction, a proud U.S. citizen, and he had a real burden to teach people about the Constitution and God's hand in our nation. And you're the head of Self-Evident Truth Ministry. So let's tell the millions and millions of listeners all over the world about you and your important work.
Sure, absolutely. So, yeah, my name's Massey, and I travel all over the country. I started doing colleges and high schools now, really. That was kind of our main focus, was to really reach out to youth. That's always been a thing of mine to go out to kids, and my wife as well. She's actually the vice president. She does a lot of our booking. And most recently, more often than not now, we've been doing a lot more churches, which I'm excited about because, you know, as well as I do, man, churches don't touch politics with a 10-foot pole. And
they're afraid to.
And they're afraid of it. But thank God they're not anymore. We're seeing a huge tide shift, you know, in that as well, because I think now they're starting to see, well, geez, do I really need, you know, what authority does the government have over me? You know, William Blackstone said that many times, you know, that the government is not the authority over the church. Even John Adams said that the church is the moral compass of society. So it's up to us to hold that standard, you know, not a government. And so this started in 2016, at the end of 2015, actually, but we really had our first event in 2016. We haven't looked back. We've really just done our best to take ground. We started something called The Awakening, where we've been going into college campuses now. We've done about 8 of them now. We're working on our 9th one here. We'll be in Ohio and University of Dayton in September, and really talking about the God's influence on governments, why he talks about it, not Republican or Democrat. I really
right,
try to
exactly,
get that out
yeah.
of the way.
Exactly.
I'm really tired of the party line. I'm neither, actually. I'm neither a Republican or a Democrat. I kind of decided that after this last election, that it just seems like the Republicans are all they're in it for themselves, or the Democrats, though they both preach about some decent things. You know, it's not constitutional, you know, the president signing executive orders, things like that. So I just see where the Constitution is what needs to be upheld, not a party. And also, as a minister, I really feel my responsibility is not only to preach the gospel, but how does that gospel influence society? So My wife and I made it our life's mission to go out and do that. And I also pastor at a church in Florida. I'm the young adults pastor there for the 18 to 20 or 18 to 40 year olds. It's a kind of a diverse group of people. And, you know, then I got three little beautiful kids. You know, they're not even little anymore. They're 9, 7, and 4. So soon to be 10, 8, and 6 or 10, 8, and 5. And it's pretty exciting, man. We got a pretty packed life ahead of us. But, you know, there's a war going on for the heart of America. There's a war going on for the soul of the mind, the kids. And we're the ones that have to step out and speak up for it. And thank God there's other ministries that do it as well, you know. So.
Well, that's something that we do as well, you know, Camp Constitution. And but one of the things I think is very important, and you do this when you go into a secular campus, more so than a Christian college, but you say that they tend to be receptive. They have questions. And I think that's when they're sincere questions, that means people are seeking. And when they usually find the secular perspective is that there are no moral absolutes, that we're all just here, we're nothing more than we live in a purposeless and moral and different universe, and pretty much that's pretty what they get, that we're just evolved.
Yeah.
We evolved with just a high level of evolution, basically stomachs that need to be fed, and what's the best way to feed them and entertain them? There's no afterlife, and what they usually get to is that the United States was some type of wicked nation founded by greedy capitalists, and all they did was exploit the poor and the minorities, et cetera, et cetera. So how do you answer that question, or these questions? How do you refute these young people when they come up with these kinds of things?
Yeah, and those are really good questions. So you had a lot in there. I think the issue with morality there's one thing that I think Christians have done, you know, we just didn't know. I think ignorance is bliss, right? But it also can destroy. If we, you know, the Bible says my people are destroyed because they lack knowledge.
Lack of knowledge.
And
yep.
So when you look at like Christianity as a whole, our first instinct to with someone attacking Christianity is, well, you don't understand. God will judge that, or the Bible says this or that. Well, the average, the atheist, that's not their standard. You know, the Bible isn't their moral authority. So for you to throw a moral authority at them that they have no submission to is just
The Apostle Paul say that it's foolishness to the to those that are perishing? That it's foolish.
Yeah.
When you use the Bible, and I'm not saying you shouldn't because you know I believe that the Word of God does not go unanswered. But when you try to use that with an atheist, it's you're dealing with a whole different worldview. So it's kind of it's a tough nut to crack. Yeah.
And it is. And so, like, yes, you're right. That the Bible says the natural man won't receive the things of the Spirit of God because they're spiritually discerned. They're only understood by the Spirit. So the job of the minister is not only to present the truth, but also use – basically, God gave us a brain. You know, we have a sound mind. How do you relate these things that are going on in the world to Scripture? I mean, one of the things I do very well is where does morality come from? I should say I do very well. I explain as well as I can that – when our founders wrote about the laws of nature, nature's God, what were they talking about? Why would they even write that? If religion wasn't important to the founders, why was it the first thing that they wrote to be protected under the Bill of Rights? You know, when you look at it, it says, you know, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion. So if religion wasn't important to them, they didn't really care. It was only wickedness. Why would they protect religion first? Not freedom of speech, not property rights, not states' rights, not, against private searches and seizures, those kinds of things, you know, that's a pretty important thing. Most people say that we can't have the First Amendment without the Second. I completely disagree. You won't have a Second Amendment if God wasn't telling you to protect yourself.
So that's right.
I think the First Amendment is so darn crucial for the rest of them. And I think it's not foolish, but it's very troublesome when we have to resort to violence and to say that the Second Amendment is the only thing that keeps the First Amendment. And the reason I say that is because if you have to depend on your own sword to keep the First Amendment, then you're going to be like Peter when Christ told him, if you live by the sword, you die by it. That's not what he meant. You know, it's the Spirit of the Lord. Now, were they armed? Yes. Anybody that tells me that God isn't four guns, you're kidding me. His disciples, Jesus' disciples were armed. I mean, for crying out loud. So it's not that. It's just that when our dependency becomes on our sword rather than the Lord, that's where you're backwards. And so first thing I talk about is morality, but why did the founders discuss this? So my entryway is really fun because I get to use history. Why the founders, you know, use that? Why were they praying? Why were there days of government issued prayer and fasting? When wickedness comes up like slavery and all these other things, I basically ask them this: tell me what country at that time didn't have slavery? I mean, that was an accepted practice. Am I for it? No. Do I speak against it? Absolutely. Am I for racism? Absolutely not. God is love. Jesus Christ said to love one another. Love your neighbor as yourself. He didn't say anything about racism. But this was an accepted, abomination. This was just an accepted thing.
It was interesting. Christianity pretty much abolished slavery in the Western world. But by the 14th and 15th centuries, we had itching ears. And we listened to pagan philosophers like Aristotle, who may have offered some important things to the world, but he said that there is a class of people that slavery is their natural condition and in their best interest. So hey, we kind of like that. So it was reintroduced.
And look what happens when we do listen to man outside of God. You know, man stealing was punishable by death in the Bible, in the Old Testament. You can't steal a person. And use them for slavery. You can't do that. You can't rape. You can't do these things. Do you know what
There was biblical slavery, as you know, but what was practiced in most of the world in the last several hundred years was not biblical slavery.
Well, biblical slavery, we got to be careful with that because it wasn't slavery. It was called indentured servitude. So what that meant?
Indentured servitude. Yes.
Yeah. So when you stole from someone, you repaid them for 7 years' labor because you couldn't pay them back. After 7 years, your master was to let you go. If you wanted to stay with your master, then you put a cowl on your ear, which means you got pierced in the ear, and you became a slave for life. So that was your decision. So, you know, we got to be careful with the slave term because it was indentured.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
You know, so I do agree with you. What was happening in the world was absolute atrocity. You know, we were just stealing people from their land, selling them on open market, thinking that we owned them, and we didn't. And so man-stealing was cursed. And as a matter of fact, when I look at an atheist, I'll say this all the time. Can you tell me in one place, in any book of history, any kind of moral code book or anything, where hatred is equated to murder other than the Bible?
Mm-hmm.
Nowhere. Jesus equated hatred to murder. So when you hate, he doesn't just say it's hatred. He says it's murder.
It's murder.
You can't be a follower of Christ if you hate your brother. If we followed that tenet, we would be a lot better off. So to them, morality is subjective, not objective. You know, so it changes with their whim, but thank God he's immutable. I love the fact that God is immutable. It's like this. If I had my money in a bank and they kept telling me, well, we're not exactly a fixed standard. We may just take your money here and there. You may have 1,000 in there 1 week, but we may have 500 into the next. But you're leaving it into our care. Would you invest your money into that bank?
No way.
You have to have a fixed standard because it's yours. It's what you invest to. God is immutable. He's unfixed. He doesn't waver. That's what I love about him. He may be, to your mind, unjust sometimes, but he's not. Everything works out to the good of those that love God. So that's one of the ways that we answer the moral issue, because nobody can explain to me still why lying is wrong. You know, because if morality was up to us, then Hitler was okay. Well, who were we to tell Hitler he couldn't kill Jews or gypsies or gay people? You know, there was a common morality, and even during the Nuremberg trials, they mentioned that the laws of God were violated. That's why those men were hung. Even, 20-something years later after World War II, you know, Hitler's henchmen. So there's the argument of morality there. And then I forgot your third point, but basically there's enough in colleges being taught right now to destroy the moral fabric of America. Nobody can deny that. But here's the issue. My question is this. Like, people say, well, schools are getting so bad, blah, blah, blah. You know, what can we do to change public schools? My question is, why do we have public schools? You know, why is the government running public schools? So, you know, is it the government to run those schools? Is it the people supposed to run those schools? Yes, because God told you to raise up your children. He told you to take care of your child. He told you to raise them and correct them and instruct them in the ways of the Lord and, you know, in the nurturing and admonition of God and those kind of things. So we're the only country, I think, that we literally pay $250,000 to indoctrinate our children. That's what we're doing by sending them to colleges. And we're letting them eat it by taking out loans and things like that. Unless they're strong in the faith, what is it, 75% of every kid that's a Christian loses their faith in Christ?
I heard it was up to 80%. And my friend Dr. Duke Pesta, he teaches at the University of Wisconsin, Oshkosh, he said nothing pleases a leftist professor to see a Christian child or a conservative-minded child lose their faith or lose their worldview to the far left. He said they delight in it. And, you know, the Bible, we know what the Bible said about destroying the innocence of a child. Better to put a millstone over your neck and go into the sea. But this is what they delight. And so we have a lot of Christian young people who may have gone to Awana or Bible study or Sunday school and maybe had godly parents who raised them the way they should. And then they put them in a secular college and they lose their faith. They become hostile, and we see it so often. And you know what?
Yeah.
One of the things that I have to marvel at the left. Very few prominent leftists lose the children. They stay leftists. I don't know one Kennedy. I mean, there may be one we don't know about, but I don't know one Kennedy family member today that is a professing Christian that would support you financially or speak at Camp Constitution. There might be one out there, but I don't know of it. And I say, how? I mean, it's almost like 100% retention rate. You know, well, we have 20% retention. They have 100%.
Yeah, and I think the main reason would be is because they appeal to sin. They appeal to lust. They appeal to, you know, you can do what you want as long as you join our party. You want to be gay, great. You want to be, you know, a transgender, sweet. You want to go out and now, what is it? A TEDx speaker? I just saw it on some thing. That a person that was speaking at TEDx basically said pedophilia is as normal as any kind of other gender identity. So those things creep in. So basically, they want to use law to ram rail their sin, you know, and then they get mad at the Christian for saying we want to use law to stop sin, which I don't agree with either. It's the Spirit of God that stops you from sin, not more law. So
right.
I think
well, that's
that,
a good question too. People will say you can't legislate morality. Well. All laws are based on someone's morality. And you brought up at the meeting, you mentioned, I forgot who you quoted, but you said that all laws must be based on God's laws, although they have no validity. It's a paraphrase.
Yes, it was William Blackstone.
William Blackstone. And by the way, that sentiment is etched over the Cambridge, Massachusetts City Hall, one of the most left-wing cities in the United States, but that was put there 100 years ago. I did a little video on it, and with Pastor Steve, one of our instructors, Stephen Kraft, and you know, he was funny. He said, "No, where do you think we are? We think we're in the Bible Belt, Alabama. No, we are in Cambridge, you know, Massachusetts." So they had it right at one point, you know.
Yeah, you're right. And when you say you can't legislate morality, the only thing that can be legislated, according to Romans 13, 1 Peter 2, blah, 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 is when someone commits an atrocity and takes away the rights from someone else. Now, if someone in their mind is thinking adulterous thoughts or they hate someone in their mind, that's between them and God.
That's
and
right.
What the left has done a really good job of, and I don't know if it's the left or just sin in general, but now they're saying hate crimes. Now they're trying to legislate your thoughts, you know, like if you have a hateful thought towards someone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like, wait, you know, as far as the only thing that can be legislated against is if you steal from someone, yeah, you took away their property. That's taking away their rights, right? If you kill someone, you just took away life, which is a God-given right. But as far as other things, I mean, those are more for like city and county jurisdictions, you know. I don't think a federal government should get involved in telling you to wear a seatbelt or to, you know, why is the federal government involved in to me, like the EPA. If you wanted to do some kind of government regulation on some kind of environmental stuff, let the states handle it or let the counties handle it. You can't do a one-size-fits-all because not every region or state is the same. So
exactly.
Basically what we're seeing is the Constitution. It's kind of like the Constitution gave the guidelines to stop the federal government from being big, and now the government references the Constitution to make them bigger.
That's right.
It's been very backwards for a very long time, you know.
Well, of course, if you actually read the Constitution, you'll see, and it was James Madison, I think it was one of the Federalist Papers, I think it was 40, but basically he said that the powers enumerated are, you know, to the federal government are clear and limited, they're defined, and the powers to the people, to the states are unlimited. Constitution does limit certain things that states can't do. For example, states can't have treaties with foreign nations. They can't coin their own money, and they can have an army, but they need permission from the federal government. They do have militia. They're supposed to, and that's another issue we won't get into because we don't have the time. But there's some things they can't. So what they're not denied to do is up to the states or to the people. That means education. Education is not mentioned at all in the Constitution. Therefore, the federal government has no business. And you mentioned the speed limits, and this is, you know how they do it. Is that the federal government will say, look, we want all states to adopt speed limits. It used to be 55, and it's 65, and some places 75. And if you don't do it, you won't get the money that's unconstitutional for us to give you to begin with. You see, just like Common Core, it's illegal for the federal government to create a curriculum for the government schools. So they say, look, we have a curriculum that that we have that was private sector created it, but we like it. We'll give you millions of dollars. You know, Bill Gates and his buddies put it together. We'll give you millions of dollars if you take it sight unseen. And they took the states, hey, we'll take the money. Who cares? You know, and states took the money. And that's how the federal government gets their, it's interesting. For every 10, I'm using not exact figures, but if I give you $10 every month and you turn around and give me $5 or $2, and you would say, hey, I'm your friend, Hal. You know, look what I've been giving you $2 every month. Yeah, but I'm giving you $10. And that's what we do. Yeah. We give money to the federal government and we get a tiny back and we think we have to be grateful to them, you know.
Yeah, I think if people realize that it's their money that they're using to do the things that you don't want them to do, people would be more realized and more capable of understanding that it is thievery. Bastiat talked about that, you know, legal
plunder. That's
right,
Frederick Bastiat
and
the law,
So
you look at
now the current, and again, this is just points that I can make on another show. I just want to talk about Madison for a second. Now, he was in a court case involving the cod fishery business, where the federal government, it was on trial basically to subsidize the cod fishery business. And this is what he said during the case, which he lost, by the way. It's weird because this is the guy who was the father of the Constitution. So he was defending the fact that the U.S. should not subsidize businesses, private businesses. They have no business doing that. It's not in the Constitution to do so. Now, here's what he said. He said, if Congress can employ money indefinitely to the general welfare and are the sole and supreme judges of the general welfare, they may take care of religion into their own hands. Now, this is a warning from Madison. He said they may take care of religion into their own hands. They may appoint teachers in every state, county, and parish and pay them out of the public treasury. They may take into their own hands the education of children, establishing in like manner schools throughout the union. They may assume the provision of the poor. They may undertake the regulation of all roads other than post roads. In short, everything from the highest object of state legislation down to the most minute object of police would be thrown under the power of Congress. Were the power of Congress to be established in the latitude contended for, it would subvert the very foundations and transmute the very nature of the limited government established by the people of America. In other words, we're not supposed to do that. Everything I just said is not in the power of Congress, and yet everything that he said has been done by Congress so far.
Has been done. He was sort of like hindsight, but I guess if you deny the principle and then A little bit of unconstitutionality leads to a whole lot more. You quoted at your wonderful presentation, you made reference to a Reverend Duché. I'm reading a book. I've got a book was published in the 1870s, Webster's Great Speeches, as in Daniel Webster. And there was a case where a will written by Stephen Girard, he put $2 million aside to build a school and forbade any members of any clergy to have any even set foot in this school. And the will, that aspect of the will was contested. And Daniel Webster was one of the greatest orators of the day. It would just say it's impossible to have any type of moral teaching without members of the clergy. It's just it's like trying to build a house without wood or have any carpenters. You know, it can't be done. And he lost the case too. Yeah, they lost the case too. But it was just fascinating that the sentiment of our founders, and he was the second generation. He wasn't his cousin Noah, who I think they were second cousins. He would be considered a founding father, but I wouldn't say that. But he was the next generation. He knew a lot of the founders and what have you. So, let's talk. We got about 5 minutes left. Let's talk a little bit about the faith of our founders and point out that, as you pointed out in the presentation, these were fallen men, like all sinners, but I think we have a very strong record to make a case that, with very few exceptions, these men were strong, devout Christians.
Yes, they were, and you know, you could look at just some of their writings. Some of the founders were actually preachers. You know, John Peter Gabriel Muhlenberg, you know, who fought in the Continental Army, you know, was a minister of the gospel. His I believe it was his brother was also of the Lutheran Synod and was against him being in the war. Thought it was actually bad to fight against the king. You know, he was actually on the side of the king. But by the end of the war, I believe he switched his sentiment. A lot of these men, 26 of them had seminary degrees. A lot of them went to Yale, Princeton, Harvard, which you know were originally founded for ministers of the gospel. That's what their mottos and creeds. I believe it's Princeton's that says, "Cursed is all knowledge outside of Jesus Christ." So, you know, obviously there was a national sentiment. If you look at Samuel Adams, I'll just take him real quick since we're in Massachusetts. He
yes.
said, principally and first of all, I resign my soul to the almighty being who gave it, and my body I commit to the dust, relying on the merits of Jesus Christ for the pardon of my sins. I think, you know, you can't deny that when he was the governor of Massachusetts, instituted statewide days of prayer and fasting. If you look at our state constitution here in Massachusetts, John Adams, who helped pen it,
That's right.
I say it all the time in my presentations, the happiness of a people and the good order and preservation of civil government essentially depend upon piety, religion, and morality. And they actually wrote in there to build churches because they knew that that's where happiness was found. I'm just going to go through a few more. George Washington said that religion and morality are indispensable supports to happiness. He said, in vain would that man claim tribute to patriotism who should labor to subvert the great pillars of religion and morality. That's just one quote, you know. There's a quote attributed to Madison who said that we were founded principally on the Ten Commandments of God. I believe it was Justice Story said we should prefer Christians as our rulers. Noah and Daniel Webster, you know, you're talking about the fathers of American education here and one of the greatest orators, talked constantly about God. Benjamin Rush, who was one of the he was the father of modern medicine. He was one of the fathers of medicine. Basically said anything in any modern education with children outside of Christianity, he said it would divulge into mess, basically. He said it would, if we don't have Christianity in public schools with the Bible, our kids would be basically lost and those kind of things.
Do you know the name of Fisher Ames? Fisher Ames was a lesser known founder. He was one of the first members of Congress from the town of Norfolk County, the town of Dedham, Massachusetts. I think it may have been Suffolk at that point. And he was one of the primary authors of the First Amendment. And in his writings, he said, in so many words, that the Bible should be the basis of all education. Now, here's a guy that wrote the First Amendment, and he believed the Bible should be the primary source of all education. So I think he knew what they wrote when they, the separation of church and state.
Yeah. I always make the comment, either our founders were straight stupid or they knew what they were writing. You know, they knew what they were writing. I mean, just in September of 1774, at the first meeting to declare independence, it was Reverend Jacob Duché that had a 2.5-hour prayer service and read Psalm 35. Adams wrote about it. You know, we had a lot of men at that time who weren't, I mean, like a Benjamin Franklin, we'll take Ben Franklin, for example. He called for prayer before the Constitutional Convention ended. It was about to explode and disperse and disband.
That's right.
And he called for prayer, and 2 weeks later, the Constitution was signed. He even said in there, if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his aid or without his notice, how shall an empire rise without his aid? You know, we can't do this outside of him. And then 2 weeks later, the Constitution. So it was Benjamin Franklin who called for prayer. Why would he do that if he was an atheist or didn't believe in God?
That's right.
Yeah, there's a lot of this that we skip out in history. And a lot of our lesser-known founders, man, these were bulldogs in the spirit. Bulldogs. I mean, you know, we don't know stories of Mayhew and Reverend Charles Chauncey were preaching sermons in their pulpits, man, as a black robe regiment, you know. So you had that sect of preachers who were the black robe regiment. They were the ones standing in their pulpits with their pistols, man, making sure they were defending the flock. So
there was
a national sentiment of God, you know, and without God and his concurring aid, every state constitution acknowledges religious freedom for that reason, because without God, we have nothing. We don't have rights.
And we have 1 minute left. How can people learn about your ministry and maybe have you speak at their church or their group?
Sure. Sure. If you go online to theselfevidenttruth.com, theselfevidenttruth.com, or our Facebook is Self Evident Ministry on our Instagram, you can call 612-237-6798 and talk to Carrie, 612-237-6798, and we would love to come to your area and do whatever you'd like us to do. Schools, whatever. We love schools. We love the challenge of schools and colleges. And if they bring up separation of church and state, I would love to talk to them anyways, because we can get some good legal action against that as well to get us to come
Excellent.
In, because they can't bar
All
that.
Right.
So.
Well, Pastor, thank you so much for being on, and may God continue to bless your important work. And thank you, folks, for listening. And until next week, may God bless you. This is Hal Shurtleff with Camp Constitution Radio, broadcast on WBCQ The Planet. Good night.